One of my favorite toys when I was a child growing up in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, was this one. Anyone have one of these? One lady. Good. Is that it? This, there are a few more over there. This is Action Man. Came in three different forms, but I went for the blonde one. And it came from America, actually. I think they called it G.I. Joe or something like that. And I loved him. I loved it. It was my primary toy as a young boy. And I would create all sorts of scenery and then imaginary scenarios of sort of daring do's that he would perform. And of course, projecting myself onto him, this was me. Physically, I've never looked like that in any way, shape, or form. Sadly, he's missing his hands. But one of the things that stood out to me, even as a child, the sort of hallmark of this figure and of this toy was this angry scar on his right cheek. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but he's got this really angry scar. It's very interesting this morning when I got it out of my pigeon box over in the parish center. A young child who was over there, I don't know, five or six, ran over and said, he's got a funny face. What's that line on his face? That is, I didn't have time to go into it, and he's not here now to get the explanation. But that is his scar. That actually is his hallmark, and you'll be interested to know, it is a trademark of Action Man, the scar on the face. And I think for me, as a young boy, that this scar somehow symbolized this man. And it showed that he was the real deal. He was an authentic warrior. He was a man. Sadly, Action Man in the 80s went out of vogue. It was knocked out by Star Wars. And we ended up, rather than these rubber, naturalistic sort of Barbie doll and Action Man, we ended up with sort of plastic little figurines from sci-fi. Action Man was just not politically correct and was certainly an incorrect gender stereotype. Now, when we come to the church in Corinth, we see a church that's far more enamored, as it were, by Star Wars characters than by Action Man. 30 times in 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians, we read about their boasting. And they're boasting in their superstars. And Paul responds here by boasting about his war scars. Paul, if you like, is a kind of spiritual Action Man. And these Corinthians had bought into and invited into their community those who were certainly more Star Wars. Okay, 2 points this morning. And the first is this. And is this all right, or should I move to an ordinary phone? Because I'm getting a lot of feedback here. Are you all right there? You're not all right. Are you not all right with the sound, or with me, or the sermon? I mean, which is it?
Not you.
You sound awful. Here's one I prepared earlier. The Corinthians boasted in their stars, their superstars. And let's look at the Bible. In 11 and verse 5, and then later in chapter 12 and verse 11, Paul refers to super apostles, the super apostles. But it may well be that this is their own designation, or the designation given to them by the Corinthians. What we do know, and we've seen this over several weeks, is that the Corinthians have really been taken in and taken into their own heart these dynamic and charismatic alpha male personalities. In verse 13 in our reading, Paul has no qualms in denouncing them. He says, such men are false apostles, they're deceitful workmen, and they masquerade as apostles of Christ.
Not everyone who holds that office or presents themselves in those terms are authentic to it. And why is Paul so harsh about these false apostles? Surely Christians should be kind and gentle and generous and erring on the side of grace every time and affirming and supporting and giving people the mic. But Paul is aware what he's dealing with. And he's dealing with people who've come into the church and they are subverting the gospel and they are diverting people from Christ. And in the name of Christ, in the office of Christ, being ministers of the gospel, nevertheless, they are undermining the gospel and they are preying on the people of God. And they're robbing Christ of what is his. Corinth is a church in a mess. And it's in a mess because they've opened their doors, they've opened their arms, they've opened their minds, and they've opened their hearts to people pretending to be men of God who are in fact wolves. The Corinthian church was planted by Paul, and he loved this church, but these people, we read this in verse 3, have led astray the Corinthian Christians. They've led them astray from purity and, Paul says, sincere devotion to Christ. Purity of heart, holiness, being set apart for the Lord, and sincere devotion to Christ. The mark of the false prophet, the mark of the false apostle, is always to undermine our reflection of Christ and our devotion to Christ. This is always a litmus test we can apply to the preacher coming in. Do they make you love Christ more? And do they make you look like Christ more? And if you don't become more like Christ, and if you don't become more for Christ, then there's something very questionable about them or about your heart. In verse 4, in chapter 11, Paul says, these men have a different Jesus, a different gospel, and a different spirit. The test is where they're leading the flock, what the flock looked like after they've been there, and the test is their Jesus. The test is their gospel. The test is the spirit that they mediate. And there are many superstar apostles who preach anything but Christ, or who preach Christ and all sorts of other things in addition, but ultimately undermine the cross and direct the saints to worldly rather than holy and heavenly interests. Came across this week a list of books, popular Christian books by today's superstar apostles. How about some of these for titles? You Can and You Will. 8 Undeniable Qualities of a Winner. Anyone read that? I mean, I haven't. It might be quite good. But anyway, what about this one? Total Life Prosperity. 14 Practical Steps to Receive God's Full Blessing. What about this one? You're getting your money's worth here. 31 Secrets to Career Success. Well, how about this? 5 keys to go beyond your barriers and live an extraordinary life. 7 keys to financial breakthrough. 7 steps to living at full potential. 7 keys to improving your life. 7 laws for uncommon success. The majority of those books are written by pastors who got rich from taking money from Christians who gave money because they wanted to get rich. Who also like numbers, like 7s and 5s. I quite like 31, at least it's one a day for a week, a month. Who is the focus in this? What is the point? What is the goal? What is the aim? What is the purpose? Is it about Christ? Is it about the imitation of Christ? Is it about the proclamation of Christ? Is it about the cross of Christ? Is it about the loveliness of Christ, the supremacy of Christ, the glory of Christ, the humanity of Christ, the deity of Christ, the worship of Christ, the service for Christ? Is it about that? Or is it, you know, where are the pronouns? Where's the weight? Where's the point? One of the marks, I think, of false teachers will always be to put the emphasis on you, to make much of you so they can make much out of you. And that's what we see in the church in Corinth. The false prophets, the false apostles, the superstars, in they come, and they're making much of the individual so they can make much from the individual. The test of a minister, the test of a ministry, is the focus of their ministry and their message and the fruit. Who gets the glory? What are the controlling pronouns? In verse 19, Paul sharply challenges the Corinthian Christians for buying into this. He says, verse 19, "You gladly put up with fools." Verse 20, he says, "These fools make you their slaves." He says, "They take advantage of you." The Greek word is katesthou, and it means to eat you or to consume you. You put up with fools. They take advantage of you. They come and eat you. Paul says in verse 20, they lord it over you. They stand over you and raise themselves over you. And then he says, and they even hit you or strike you in the face. And you put up with it. Superstars without scars who come in. They're not praying for you. They're praying upon you. Paul had established the church, but these interlopers were eating the church. In 11 verse 8, Paul says that he took no money from them. He didn't want to be a burden to them, but instead he took money from the Macedonian Christians who paid for him and his upkeep in order that he might go to these Corinthians and minister to them. And yet in come these super pseudo apostles and they just consume. And he says, you put up with it. You put up with these fools. I watched a couple of videos this week. It's amazing what you find out there in the church. I watched one video of a ministry by one of God Wants You Rich apostles. And this chap was having an interview with another wealthy frontman for this sort of apostolic prosperity ministry. And the guy was talking about being in his own private jet. And he said at one point, as he's flying in his own private jet, he said he was thanking God for his own private jet. And God said to him, "Are you going to stop there? Are you going to stop with one private jet?" So he said at this point, Jesse Duplantis is his name, he took off his seatbelt. He said, "I jumped up and I said, wow." And he was getting all this revelation. God didn't want him just to have one private jet. He should have several. And as he stood up and began reflecting on this and was sharing this story, this other prosperity preacher doing the hosting said to him, "You couldn't stand up and pray if you didn't have your own plane." He said, "You're right." And then he said, "We wouldn't be able to do 90% of our ministry if we didn't have our own private jets." And then this apostle, forget rich, on the back of God, says, "You just can't manage today getting in a long tube with demons." Talking about an ordinary aeroplane. I mean, what absolute rot. Seriously, Paul says, you put up with fools who lord it over you and punch you in your face and eat from you. If this isn't that, I don't know what is. And that one main guy doing the interview, I watched another video of him celebrating the fact that their ministry had received over a billion flow. Now, seriously, saints, the pulpit is rarely the place to stand up and speak against ministries and other models. It's not, but it's the text that is leading us here. And Paul is saying to these Corinthians, you put up with rubbish. And they are preying on you, they're defiling you, they're consuming you, they're ruining you, and they're robbing Christ. And they're a scandal to the gospel. They're bringing the gospel into disrepute. And because Paul is a shepherd, because Paul cares, because he honors Christ, he loves the gospel, he loves the flock, he has to call it out. So often we put up with so much. And the church today puts up with so much nonsense. And it is incumbent upon us, especially in a time of renewal, but it is incumbent upon us to be people who exercise discernment and say, what are the values of this ministry, this man, this woman? What are the fruits? What are they about? Are they like these guys coming in and simply doing it for their own benefit? Came across another video I watched this week. I had a great week. And in it, this self-appointed apostle in Mexico was strutting his stuff. He said, when you have started 1,000 churches in a hostile environment, when you have raised 500 people from the dead, when you learn to talk the way Jesus did, then I'll listen to you, otherwise shut up. This is a big man on the circuit, well known. There's no evidence to back up almost anything that he's claimed. No one raised from the dead, hardly any churches, and so on. I certainly don't think he talks like the Lord. Charismatic stars, where are the scars? What is the focus? Is it them or is it the Lord? You gladly put up with fools who make you their slaves, who stand over you, who eat you, and who slap you in the face. Now, those are extreme and absurd examples. They're just uncomfortable to listen to. But regardless of scale, in many smaller ways and more subtle ways, we, like the Corinthians, can fall prey to false gospels and false currents that ultimately stop us from a pure devotion to Christ and that undermine and erode the gospel ministry, and that make us the point, and us the center, and us the focus, and our well-being, and our prosperity. It's about us, rather than it being about Christ and taking his gospel to a lost world. We are easily duped, and duped very easily. And compare that with dear John Wesley, who I also was thinking about this week. And despite earning a fortune from his numerous publications and printed sermons, he said this, when I die, if I leave behind me 10 pounds, you and all humankind bear witness against me that I have lived and died a thief and a robber. That's the mark of a man of God. And when he died, they found just a few coins in his pocket and a few coins in his chest of drawers. And on his deathbed, he kept repeating the words written by his brother Charles in that hymn. He says, I am the chief of sinners, but Jesus died for me. What is the message being preached? What is the focus of the ministry? What is the weight of it? Who is the object of it? Who is getting the glory? And in Corinth, they were boasting in this. I watched that guy boasting of bringing in a billion, claiming to be a billionaire. I was sick to the pit of my stomach. But in a scaled down way, so often we put up with it because our flesh is drawn to it. Our flesh wants to raise the standard of living, but the Spirit wants to raise the standard of giving. Well, Corinth boasted in their stars, but Paul boasted in his scars. And this is where I really want to put the weight this morning. These superstar apostles made much of themselves, but Paul made much of Jesus and nothing of himself. You cannot preach, you cannot promote the crucified God and preen and strut like a peacock. You can't do it. You cannot preach the suffering servant and seek to live comfortably with others serving you. The Corinthian superstars were educated, they were orators, they were leaders, they were dynamic, charismatic personalities and impressive kind of alpha males. But Paul says in verse 23, are they servants of Christ? So are they servants of Christ? That's the question. Who are they serving, themselves or Christ? Christ and his bride or themselves? And then Paul says, I'm a better servant. I'm a better servant. And by claiming to be a better servant, he's saying that there are criteria. There's a way of assessing whether that's objective or not. There's a test. There's a benchmark. Do you know what I mean? There's a filter that can be applied. And Paul makes no attempt at self-justification. He doesn't point to his miracles or the churches that he's planted. What does Paul do? He simply lifts up his shirt. He lifts up his shirt and he shows his scars. In a movie that I really like, it was the original Rambo movie. It was called First Blood. I didn't like any of the others, but I really... Anyone else like that film? You know it's true. And I think some of you were lying because you didn't put your hands up, but really secretly you like it. Anyway, I think it is a great film. It's a very moving film, very sad film. But in that film, Sylvester Stallone, it's his best film, I think, he plays this guy, John Rambo, who's an ex-Green Beret soldier from Vietnam. He comes back and he's rejected and all his friends are dead and he's just drifting. And he's arrested in this small town by this big police officer. And there's a classic scene where they take him back to the police HQ and they take him down into the cells and they're pushing him around a bit. They're heavy-handed with him. And one of these sort of big bull sergeant gets his truncheon out and he's bashing it around and he's being intimidating and bullying and domineering and slapping him around and standing over him. And they take off his shirt. And it's just a wall, his back and his chest, just a wall of scar tissue. He's a warrior, and then there's flashbacks to his time in Vietnam. He's a warrior who's been at war and who's suffered. And the other guys sort of just, you know, they're almost sort of chewing on their lips. They realize, here's this one bully sergeant, but here's the man. Just there, he doesn't say anything. But his scars say it all, and they take the dog cut tags, and then they find out that he's a warrior and a Congressional Medal of Honor winner and so on, and all of that stuff. It's a movie, but that's a very powerful moment because there's this big bully, but the scars say it all. Who's the real man here? Who's the real person? Who's somebody special in this room? It's not the man with the mouth, it's the man with the scars. The Corinthian apostles are just showing off their bullies and saying, and having a go at Paul and saying, well, you're not very, you know, you're not a good speaker, you're not very impressive in person, you're physically weak, and so on. And Paul here in this chapter, he just lifts his shirt and says, look at the scars. They speak for themselves. Let's just look at this list. There are actually four lists in 2 Corinthians. A letter dominated by boasting. Paul's just going to talk about suffering. And these scars legitimate his apostleship. He talks here about far more labors. He said, I've worked far harder than all of you. Far more imprisonments, numerous imprisonments for the gospel. Countless beatings, he says. I faced death many times, literally many deaths. He's been in the context of death many times. It's amazing. He says, five times from the Jews I received the 40 lashes minus one, which was the maximum punishment a synagogue could give. Three times I was beaten with rods. Rods was the punishment that you got from the Roman magistrates. Three times I was shipwrecked and spent a day and night at sea, frequently in danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers. Do you see, eight times danger? It's just written over his life. In toil, in hardship, many sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, without food, in cold and naked. Apart from these things, he says, there's a daily pressure on me. The anxiety I feel for all the churches. Who is weak, he says, and I am not weak. Who falls into sin? He's talking about people in his church. And I don't burn with indignation because I care about their state. He says, if I boast, I'll boast of these things that show my weakness. Why? Because he did not want to put his hand to God's glory. When we read a list like that, and we can read it so easily, bleary-eyed in our quiet time, first thing in the morning or last thing at night, we kind of miss it. But actually, when we read that, we need to bow our heads in a kind of awe. We need awe before the scars of a true apostle. So often we put up with fools. Suffering, scars, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, for year upon year upon year. How many of us would have given up at just the prospect of such danger, let alone the experience of it? When I read the fact that it says five times I received the 40 lashes minus one, I'm amazed, because you'd think after the first time he wouldn't put himself in a synagogue context where they're going to beat him up again. Well, I won't go to the synagogues then. And yet he did go back to the synagogues again and again. When you read that three times he's beaten with rods, you'd think after the first time, I'm going to avoid the Romans. I'm going to avoid preaching in the streets. I'm going to avoid precipitating a problem and a crisis. I'll avoid that. But no, he goes back and gets beaten again. Three times shipwrecked. You'd think after the first time, you'd think, I'm not going to get on a boat again. I'm not going to go and travel anywhere to preach the gospel. But he does it again. Just repeatedly, he's putting himself in harm's way. Why? Because he's living for Christ. He's living for the gospel. And regardless of the cost, he understands what it is to take up his cross, to die daily, to follow Jesus. He understands the cost of discipleship, and he knows it's not about him. What is the cost of discipleship? It's not making money from other disciples. It's laying down your life for the King. In Pilgrim's Progress, Christian meets two men who have refused to advance. We don't know their names. They're just called two men, and they refuse to go any further, and they're coming back. And Christian says to them, where are you going? And they say, back, back. And we would have you do it too if either life or peace is prized by you. Well, it isn't prized by Christian. Eternal life is prized by Christian. Peace with God is prized by Christian. And so he continues. And then the two men say, thou hast sore broken us. It's an old quote from the King James, the Psalms. Thou hast sore broken us in the place of dragons. What a verse. Psalm 44:19. Thou hast broken us in the place of dragons and covered us with the shadow of death. That's written over Paul's life, but he's happily, freely, willingly going to lay his life down for Christ and puts himself in harm's way. We live in a culture and we live in a church that is so risk averse and risk, you know, risk assessment culture. My wife teaches little children, little infant children. She was telling me that she had to do a risk assessment the other day because they're in the playground and there was this huge puddle in the playground of several inches. So she has to do a risk assessment. What are the risks associated with a 4-foot wide puddle in a playground? I mean, we all know every kid wants to jump in the puddle. But she's got to do risk assessment just in case. You know, some of us are like that. We won't even jump in a puddle in a playground for the King. Paul's scars say it all. I bear in my body the marks of Christ. Paul once prayed, I want to know Christ, the power of the resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being made like him in death. The fellowship of his sufferings. This is the fellowship of sufferings. Go through that list that he's just given. Many of those things Jesus experienced for him, and he was willing to experience them for Jesus. Sufferings and scars. The Corinthians wanted superstars, and Paul just showed them his scars. St. Augustine said, perhaps in that eternal kingdom we shall see on the bodies of the martyrs the traces of the wounds which they bore for Christ's name. Because it will not be a deformity, but a dignity in them. And a certain kind of beauty will shine in them. In the body, though not of the body. Beauty, dignity, and glory will shine through them. You know, here in Oxford, we're into making, you know, people come up, they come to university, they want to earn their diplomas, they want to earn their degrees, they want to go and make a mark. They want to make their mark. If we're faithful to Christ, it may well be he'll make his mark on us. And far more important than those letters after our name will be those scars on our body that we receive for faithfully following hard after him. I need to finish. The Corinthians dropped the cross and lost the plot. They had embraced false teachers, wolves in sheep's clothing, super apostles who came and preened themselves and preyed on the people. They taught a false gospel and a false Christ and released a false spirit. And Paul reminds them that the criteria is the imitation of Christ. We follow the crucified one. We follow the scarred one. We follow the wounded lover. And that is to be the mark of his people. We take up our cross. We bear our scars and we are wounded lovers. I said at the beginning, the scar on action man is actually a trademark. They registered it as a trademark, that angry scar. The scar on us is a trademark. What is the trademark? What is the hallmark? What is the mark of a follower of Christ? If faithful, there will be scars. This week, Tim Cavour is coming to speak to us at Hungary on Wednesday night. And he was teaching the leadership this week. We had a session with him, and he was just sharing a bit about what he's doing in this hard place, this gospel place. And at the end, Charlie just said to him, have you got anything you'd like to say, anything you'd like to ask? And he just left me stunned. This young man, brilliant young man, came up to Oxford, earned his degree, I think it was in engineering, had a bright career ahead of him, but he's given it all up to be a missionary in the back of beyond to an unreached people group, sharing the gospel of Christ, laying down his life for Christ. And at the end he just said, well, will you pray that I, according to Colossians 1, do my bit to make up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ? And then he said that I will be faithful in affliction. I went up to him afterwards and I said, just repeat that again. I think I missed it. Is that what you said? And he just looked at me and said, yeah, that's what I said. He's there serving the poor. He's there putting in water pumps. He's there caring for the needy. And he's there laying down his life for the gospel. He's a real Christian. Come and listen to a real Christian on Wednesday. And this week, let's think about these Corinthians who lost it because they put themselves at the center of it all rather than Christ crucified. Amen.